Chapter 10. I need to procure a way off this rock, Sinjir mutters, pushing on through the narrow streets of Mira. He passes by a food vendor. The big-headed Bith, like most of the vendors, have their tables and shops pressed into the nooks and alcoves of the city's buildings. As he passes by, he grabs a crispy something or other from a dangling rack. He quick pops it to his other hand so nobody sees, then looks down. Some manner of little bird. Batter-dipped, deep-fried. He bites into it. Warm. Juicy. Ooh, too warm, too juicy. It'll do, though, since suddenly he's starving. Behind him, the Twi'lek man from Pock's bar hurries after him.
But why would you want to leave?
To get away from you. The alien has been following him for the last hour. Sinjir left the bar to clear his mind, and better yet, to get far away from that foolish scuffle, which he would have been wise to avoid, and this gawping blurg who's trailing Sinjir like a lost neck. Instead, Sinjir says, I don't want to be here when it all goes to pieces. All the running around, and the yelling, and the... He gesticulates with his hands to indicate a frenzied mess. Chaos is most unpleasant. As if to emphasize his point, a pair of TIE fighters roar over their heads, not far above the city buildings. This may not be an occupation, but something's up.
But you're a rebel. You're here to fight the Empire.
Sinjir stops. You're a rebel. He almost wants to laugh, but the idea is absurd. Too absurd, so absurd, he can only stand there, his breath caught in his chest. Might as well take the lie. A lie that really began on the forest moon of Endor, many months ago. And run with it. Yes, he says, wheeling on the Twi'lek, firmness in his voice. I am an agent for the New Republic. That is correct. And I must take what I have learned here and bring it back to my loyal allies at the Alliance. From over the Twi'lek's shoulder, he spies a trio of stormtroopers pushing up through this crooked alley. Shoulder to shoulder, blasters out. They're looking for someone. Something. Maybe him. Sinjir grabs the Twi'lek, pulls him into a small alcove. Finger to his lips. The stormtroopers pass. See? We are in danger. The Twi'lek man nods.
My name is Orgodomo Dokura.
The Twi'lek says, his head tails twitching like serpents as he speaks his name with some pride.
Please, let me help you. Make me an agent of the Rebellion.
You mean the New Republic?
Yes, yes.
My name is... Marcus Kozin. A name he just makes up right there on the spot. Kozin is a family name, distant on his mother's side. Marcus is... Well, he really did just make that one up. You want to help me? Help me find transport off this planet. If there's a blockade up there... He points heavenward, and even as the swirling clouds part, he can see the distant shapes of triangles floating up there in the sky. Imperial Star Destroyers. Then I need a Sub Rosa way of escape. Who can grant me that? Who do I go to? Ogadoki Domura?
Orgodomo Dokura.
Yes, excellent, whatever. Just answer the question.
You're going to need to see Surat Nuat.
The gangster? Him, really? No other competing syndicates? No smugglers guild here? No fellow who knows a fellow who knows a very nice lady pilot? None of that? The Twi'lek offers a wan smile with those little sharp teeth.
Sorry.
Fine, let's go. You can show me the way. They step out of the alcove, and there stand two stormtroopers, centimeters away. So close, in fact, they almost run into each other.
Out of the way!
One of the troopers barks, then reaches with a sweeping arm to push them aside. The other stormtrooper, though, his helmeted head turns for a quick second look.
Hey! Hey! Grab them!
So much for that. Sinjir ducks a grabbing arm and knees the other's blaster up so that the barrel points toward the sky as it fires.
He snatches the rifle and cracks one across the helmet, knocking him back.
To the Twi'lek, Sinjir mouths the word, run. She literally cannot see the forest for the trees. In her sights, Princess Leia Organa, dressed not as a princess, not as a dignitary or diplomat or envoy from another world to another, but garbed instead in the raiments of a soldier. It's no costume. Jazz has read the files. And even without the files, the stories are known. Leia is a powerful woman, as capable with a blaster as 10 stormtroopers, 20 even. And right now, she's injured. A bird with its wing broken. An easy target. Jazz sits up in one of the Andorian trees. Massive trunked things. Impossibly large. They make her feel very small. It has taken her quite some time just to get to this spot. Navigating the battle. Skirting laser fire. Avoiding those little black-eyed rat cubs that are native to this place. Now she's in place. All around, the fighting has died down. The fuzzy natives are all around, wrenching helmets off stormtrooper heads, bashing them once more before dragging them back through the jungle. Then an Imperial scout walker comes tromping through the woods, brush crackling beneath its feet, guns pointed at the shield bunker. Han Solo emerges, while Leia remains crumpled against the door, hands up. The golden droid frittering about, an astromech down for the count. If the walker blasts them into oblivion, then what? Could she still recover the body? Cash it in for credits? Claim success? A deception. One she does not prefer. Jazz Imari is a professional. And though she despises the Galactic Empire, they are the client. And if they ever found out, though... suddenly, she wonders if that even matters. That is not for her to worry. Her worry is this moment. An opportunity to finish the job. She again returns to Leia in her scopes. Her finger coils around the trigger like a starving vine snake. And the scuff of a boot. Jazz opens her eyes, stands up. Moving quickly reminds her of the hit she took falling down from that zip line. Then she fired a secondary grapple line late, too late, and its anchor claw moored onto a balcony just 3 stories above the road. The line jerked her arm damn near out of its socket, and then she swung down and slammed into the side of the palace wall. A wall brushed with rough, jagged stucco. Her arm now scraped up, the skin in tatters, already crusting over with scabs. That doesn't matter now. What matters is...
who might you be?
A Sullustan stands there. One of his eyes is dead. An opalescent cataract over it. And around it, a starburst of scar tissue. A small nose of 2 pinholes and pursed lips sit underneath the double flaps of jowl tissue. Atop his head, a skullcap. Black. Like a spider clutching his scalp.
Surratt,
she says. He is, of course, not alone. 6 others stand behind him. Various thugs of various races. 2 Narquois with blasters pulled. An Athorian with a long rifle and 1 eye bruised shut. A pair of gray-faced Duros. And at the back, a heaving, seething Herglick. The blowhole atop its slick black skin, puffing out and hissing gouts of breath and spit. The Herglick has an axe. A very big axe. Jazz Imari curses herself. She fell asleep, here in the boys' junk shop. She came in, didn't find Temin Wexley anywhere, then curled up on a back bench next to a table, holding the board to some child strategy game.
I know you,
the Sullustan says. His face is wet and thick with flaps, and one would expect his voice to be some slurry gargle of sounds, or, as with some of those from Sullust, a gabbling jabber. but his voice is smooth, almost velvety. A deep bass.
You are that bounty hunter, Jasimari.
Glad my name gets around in the proper circles.
She offers a stiff smile, utterly fake.
Whatever this is, it doesn't involve me. Excuse me.
She moves to skirt past him, but he sidesteps back into her path. He offers a raised finger, then tick-tocks it side to side.
And may we talk?
I'm on the job, so unless you have credits to spare.
Please. You have enough time for a nap. Surely you have the luxury of speaking with a friend.
That's a jab at her for sleeping. A deserved one.
A friend? Are we friends?
We could be, if you're honest.
She pauses, then sighs, and takes a step back.
Let's talk.
Why are you here? Seems a strange place to find a hunter of your caliber. This boy, he's a shop.
The Sullustan makes a face like he's just licked the hind end of a bantha.
It's really beneath your level.
She shrugs.
I need a part for my gun. He has parts.
I have parts.
One of the Narquois chuckles.
It's no slight against you. It's a small component, and really beneath your level. So I came here.
Surratt claps his hands together. A moist sound.
Ha ha! Very good. Very good.
But then the little smile drops off his puckered lips. He steps forward.
But may I offer a countermanding theory?
Jazz is good at reading body language, a talent that has been practiced, one of her many senses she endeavors to keep sharp, like a knife. All of the gangster's body has tensed up right now, his eyes narrowing, then going wide again. Paranoia bleeds off him in waves, a not uncommon characteristic of individuals in his position. Certainly, head of a crime syndicate is a life replete with nigh-constant threat. Her life is similar, but she knows not to give in to it. Paranoia is a deadly emotion. Deadly for you, but deadly for those around you, too.
Whatever you're thinking,
I am thinking that insolent grub Temen Wexley has decided to make a play. He orchestrated the theft of something important to me. And now he intends to dispatch me.
Another step forward.
He's a crafty little trilobite, that one. Smart, if not smart enough. He comes at you from the side, as he has done to me for the last year. Nibbling away at my business, like the hiss worm grubs of Sullust, chewing up our subterranean gardens, eating the roots of our underground trees.
The gangster's moist face flaps tremble.
You! He hired you to kill me!
There it is.
You're being paranoid,
she says.
Paranoia has kept me alive. Even when it has turned out misguided, I remain happily paranoid and have no regrets about it. Better safe than sorry.
I'm not here to kill you.
So you say. I let you go, I likely get a slug in the back of my skull before I lay my head to rest tonight.
Jazz thinks.
If I wanted to end your existence, I could do it right here, right now.
At her back is a small utility knife. The blade would spring out with the tap of a button. She's fast, faster than him, but not faster, she suspects, than the cadre of his cohorts. Certainly not faster than their weapons. Another option is to run, duck, dodge, feint. Move. Attack them, not him. Distract. Fling junk. But they're all blocking the door out. And she's both tired and injured. Not an ideal situation. She does calculations. Only one option presents itself. An excruciating solution, in fact. But she has no other reasonable choice.
I'm not here for you. I'm here for someone else. The pay is good. I'll cut you in. 75-25.
Oh, my.
He fans himself.
25%.
His mouth twists into a sour curve.
You think that's what your life is worth?
Just kill him.
No.
60-40 split,
she offers.
And you facilitate. You help get me close. At that level, I expect my partners to earn their pay.
A true statement, that. Or would be, if she ever worked with partners.
Let me guess. The target is Imperial? I see what's happening out there. Stormtroopers in the streets. Officers clucking along like little gray birds. The TIE fighters. The shuttle.
He smirks.
Rumor has it one such shuttle of a Lambda designation fired on the old Capitol building.
So, you will help?
By the stars, no. The Empire is an ally. You think I haven't heard? You're no longer offering contracts to the likes of them, or the likes of me. You're a kept dog now, on the Alliance's leash. Really quite sad.
Her muscles tighten. This isn't working. She makes one last plea.
You need to watch the stars, Sorat. The galaxy is wheeling on its axis. It's turning against the Empire. Don't tie your fortunes to that ship, because it's about to come crashing down. The New Republic...
is a bastion of fools!
He suddenly screams, foul-smelling saliva flecking her cheeks. She pivots on the ball of her foot. A blast from one of the Narcois hits her in the side. Her foot skids out. She crashes down on a table full of spacer parts. Metal clatters against the floor as she slides off, her body slack, her mind suddenly disconnected from her muscles. A stunning shot, not a killing one. Sorat stands over her, hands clasped in front of him. He seethes.
The New Republic will make no room for the likes of me. I will not face extinction at the hands of a choir of overly moralistic do-gooders. The Empire allows me to work, and so the Empire remains my friend. And now, as it turns out, I have a new gift for my friend.
He claps his hands again, and suddenly his cohorts are picking her up. The Herglick tosses her over his slick cartilaginous shoulder. She wills her hands to move, her legs, her teeth, anything at all, but it's all for naught. Her efforts are futile. As they carry her out, she thinks,
"You should have killed me."
Syngier steps out of the fading light of day and into the dank underground. Well, what to call it? It's a cantina, probably at least in part. The name hanging on the door outside says the Alcazar. But it's more than just a cantina. By the look of it, it's also a gambling house, and a house of ill repute. Probably also a slaver market, and black market, and it's a whole damn compound, frankly. In this room sits an elevated stage on which plays some warbling gang of so-called musicians. Along the far wall is a long black bar, carved out of some dead hunk of lacquered driftwood. And everywhere else, tables of gamblers sit, all praying to catch a little of that magic. Whether at Pazak, or rolling sheg knuckles, or yanking the lever on the one-armed smuggler. Gambling. Syngier never understood it. He had to take punitive measures against any Imperial soldier or officer attempting to gamble in the bunks, the mess, on a long and lonely shift. He decided that gambling was never about the credits. It was always about the risk. The risk and the thrill it brings. Sinjir has no love of that thrill. He wants to get off this planet as soon as possible. "Come on, Ogli," he says, waving his new friend farther.
"Orgadomo."
"Uh-huh. Let's get a drink." His own sogginess is starting to dry up and wear off. Now's a good time to replenish that pleasant feeling. And, of course, find out a little information. He grabs a length of the Twi'lek's head tail and pulls him up to the bar. Sinjir gives the bar top a good wet slap. The bartender, a human man, as scruffy as a Wookiee, yet somehow slimy like a wart, turns, popping some kind of thin green leaf in his mouth. He chews it. Green fluid runs down his chin, and he licks the one good tooth in his mouth.
"What's that?"
"Two drinks. I'll have a, He turns to the Twi'lek. "You first, friend. What are you having?"
"An ale?"
The Twi'lek looks nervous. Sinjir makes a face. "He'll have an ale. I need something stronger. You got Jogan fruit brandy?"
"Kind of a fancy place you think this is,"
the bartender rumbles.
"I got ale, more ale, other ale, different ale, grog and starfire ski."
"I'll take that last decoction, then. A jorum of ski for me." The bartender grumbles, begins pouring a glass of something brown and muddy before sliding a bottle of foaming ale to the Twi'lek.
"That'll be 10 credits.
Sinjir catches the man's wrist, a gentle hold, and the man's skin is, as its appearance suggests, sweat-slick and slimy. The man gives Sinjir's hand a poisonous look as another squirt of green fluid runs down his chin. Sinjir laughs, withdraws his hand, and says,
"One more thing."
"Go on."
"I need to see the man in charge of this establishment, Surat Nuat."
"Oh, do you?"
"I do, and I will pay."
The bartender's eyes flit about.
"Then let's call it 100.
Sinjir winces.
"That's valuable drinking money."
He reminds himself that now it's also valuable escaping money. He unpockets the credits and slides the small cairn of filthy lucre across the table.
"Now," he says, "where can I find him?"
The bartender gets a big, nasty grin across his face. Like a smear of mud across the wall, that grin.
"He's coming in the door right now."
Sinjir sighs.
He turns and looks. A Sullustan is coming in the door. Milky eye. Smug, self-satisfied look. He's trailed by a pack of punks and thugs. The way all eyes turn toward him, a mix of genuine awe and utter fear, tells Sinjir that this alien is the real deal. That this is, indeed, Surat Nuat. He's about to turn and demand his credits back, but then he sees someone else. A woman. Zabrak. Or is it Dathomirian? Or Iridonian? He's not sure of the distinction, or if one even exists. Those pale eyes. The dark tattoos forming spirals and knots on her cheeks and brow and chin. His breath catches in his chest. Sinjir stands there, ferns up to his hips. A fallen tree across the soft, spongy moss of Endor. Beneath him, a rebel. Dead. The man's outer clothes, vest, poncho, camouflage pants, now hanging on Sinjir's frame. He puts the helmet on, too. Blinks, swallows, tries to focus. A bead of blood drips down Sinjir's head, to the end of his nose. It hangs there before he sneezes it away. His ears still ring from the sound of the shield generators going up. His hands are filthy with dirt and blood. His own blood. Superficial cuts, he tells himself. Nothing deep. He's not dying. Not today, anyway. Then, the snap of a stick. He turns, and there she is. An alien. Sharp, thorny spurs forming a crown on her moonlight blue skin. She turns and sees him. The tattoos on her face, whorls and corkscrews of black ink, almost seem to turn and drift, like snakes entwining with other snakes. But when he blinks again, that stops. Just an illusion. He's still shaken up. Maybe she's not even real. She nods at him. He nods at her. And then she yanks on what looks like a vine, and a whole swath of netting, netting woven through with sticks and blankets for purposes of hiding something in plain sight, pulls away. Underneath is a speeder bike. The woman cinches a rifle up on her back. She gives Sinjir one last look. Then the engine of the speeder bike revs, and she's gone, whistling through the underbrush and between the trees. He knows her. I know her, he says, low enough so that only his new friend hears. The Twi'lek grunts in confusion.
Her,
Sinjir clarifies.
The one with Surratt's thugs.
I saw her on the moon of Endor.
I don't know her. Never mind. Come on.
He hops off the stool, then quick darts back to the bar and slams back the ski.
Oh, it tastes like he's drinking pure laser fire, and it carves a hot, burning channel deep through his core. Sinjir shakes it off, then pursues Surratt and his entourage.